You're listening to Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering. Want to go to the beach this weekend? Well, if these next two conversations have their way, you will stay on the sand. First, as of today, 59 beaches are actually closed in the state because of algae or bacteria in the water. WBUR's Allie Jarmanning is here with more. Hey there, Allie.
Hey, Tiziana.
So there are, as I understand it, 1,100 public and semi-public beaches subject to water regulation by the Department of Public Health. I hear 59 today closed. That's more than 5%. Is that a lot, Allie?
I mean, it's definitely seems like a lot, and it's not the lowest amount. Like, just in the time I've been reporting this, in the last couple weeks, I saw just the number of beach closures go from like a dozen or so to like up to, you know, 70 was yesterday. We're back down a little bit, but as it's been rainier in the last couple weeks, it has definitely affected the beach closures for sure.
And this rain, this is the thing, right, Allie?
Yeah. So state data show that the rain, basically the rainier it is in a summer, the more beach closures we're going to see. And that's because think about everything that is on our sidewalks, on our street, trash, bacteria, dog waste, all sorts of stuff. When it rains, like that has to end up someplace. And a lot of times it can end up in our water. There's also some issues with storm, sewage overflows, things like that. But rain is a huge factor in this.
Well, when you put it that way, I'm like, yeah, no, I get that. But what we're saying is it's the water. It's not that the sand on a beach, for example.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
And it's unsafe because what happens when that makes it into the water, that if you walk across the sand on the beach that is closed and you put your toes in the water?
Well, you can definitely go on the sand. The sand is not the thing that's dangerous at all. It's swimming in water that has high levels of bacteria or algae in it. So you could get an eye infection. You could get gastrointestinal type of distress if you had like an open cut or something. That wouldn't be great. So those are some of the things that you could deal with. Of course, we have not seen like a reported outbreak or anything like that from people swimming in unsafe water, but it's just something that health officials say people should be aware of. And that's why they close the beaches.
And
how do
health officials know what beaches to close?
Yeah. So all across the state during the summer, on mostly a weekly basis, although some beaches are tested daily, a health inspector will go out, take a little scoop of water, seal that up and send it to a testing facility. And they'll say, yep, it's under the threshold for safety or over it. And if it's over, then they have to, they will put up a flag or put up a sign and say, you know, the water is closed today. And they can't reopen it till those numbers go back down.
Okay. And are some, you know, beaches like closed a lot and some aren't very much because they're more susceptible to runoff, or is it random? What do we know?
Yeah. So there are some that tend to be closed more than others. Like Kings Beach and Lynn is one. They have a huge sewer pipe that, you know, dumps, dirty water into the ocean right there. And so there's a big effort by the city there to get basically a UV light system that would kill the bacteria. So that's one type of issue where they have like, here's this pipe that's causing issues. Other places, like I went up to Gloucester and talked to folks up there, and they have a really nice little creek that leads into Good Harbor Beach, the open ocean. And so over a couple years ago, they were seeing all these high tests. And so they were like, why is this happening? So they spent actually $120,000 on consultants to try to be like, is this a pipe that's leaking? Is it a septic system issue? Like trying to like fix all these little things that it could be. And they weren't really able to figure it out, which is hard, but they have been okay this year in terms of they haven't had any closure days, at least so far. So and that's an issue for a place like Gloucester because it's such a beautiful, it's a place that people go for the beach a lot of times. And so here's Jill Cahill. She's the chief administrative officer there. Here's what she had to say about that.
Our beaches are really our greatest natural resources. They're a big part of who the people who live here in Gloucester are and why people come to visit. So we don't want to have beach closures when we only have really two or three good months of beach season.
And so that's kind of why a lot of these cities and towns do put a lot of focus on keeping the water as clean as it can be and try to figure out what the issue is, because people who live there and visit there really want to be able to use it.
So I was also intrigued in your reporting on this, that there's this idea that there's a lag in the tests. Well, I'll let you talk about it. Just tell us about it. That's kind of a big deal.
Yeah. So we have 59 beaches that are closed today. And that's because of water that was tested yesterday. So basically today's closure is yesterday's test. And so we have this delay that the water today might actually be clean, but we're going off of what the test said yesterday. So it's kind of like if you think of when we were doing COVID testing in the early days, you know, you get your nose swab done Monday, but you might not find out till Tuesday or Wednesday what the actual result is.
I remember.
And so, so that's kind of the issue here. We don't yet have rapid home tests, you know, for our water to just like stick a dipstick in and know, oh, it's good. And so Chris Mancini, he's head of Save the Harbor, Save the Bay. He and I talked about this a little bit. And they did a study of Constitution Beach in East Boston. And of the handful of times in this 1 year that they looked, every posted closure was wrong.
The test was right for the day before, but because you don't get the test results for 24 hours, you put the flag up 24 hours later, and now you actually have clean water. You're actually taking beach days away from people.
So, you know, there's people that are trying to work on those kind of rapid tests. They've tried to do predictive testing like, hey, it's really rainy today, so we're going to close it as a precaution. But even that is only about like 50% accurate most of the time. So there's really no exact science to this yet.
Well, and given, you know, the Gloucester thing ringing in my ears, that feels like a pretty big deal. So what are you going to watch for next on this, Allie?
Well, you know, I'm always checking to see whether my local beach is open or closed. Yeah. So if anybody wants to check that, we're good today. You could go you just Google like Massachusetts beach water quality. You'll go to a state site and you can see what the status is at your own beach. But yeah, I'm just wanting to know, you know, like whether any of these places like Gloucester or elsewhere figure out why these issues are happening and see if anything changes in terms of how we're testing, because that could be a big deal.
WBUR's Allie Jarman, and good luck with the tests, and thanks very much.
Thanks.
It's a Carcharodon and Carcharias. It's a great white.
Look, we depend on the summer people here for our very lives.
You are not going
and
to have
you
a summer
close those
unless
beaches,
you deal with this
finished.
Problem. We're not only going to have to close the beach, we're going to have to hire somebody to kill the shark. I mean, we're going to have to tell the Coast Guard.
Actors Roy Scheider, Richard Dreyfuss, Murray Hamilton in Jaws, and of course, a movie that haunts researchers like our next guest for the way it has turned our collective psyche against great whites. Greg Skomel is our resident shark biologist with the Massachusetts Division of Marine Fisheries, and the great whites are out in force off the coast of the Cape. So we wanted to talk to Greg about it. Greg, welcome back.
Hi, Tiziana. Nice to be here.
It's great to have you. And of course, Greg, this time of year, that is what is on people's minds. And over a week period between June 30th and July 10th, there were roughly 15 great white sharks detected over or spotted on the Cape. Is that, you know, we always ask you this, is that a lot? Is it just people are paying attention more? Let's size this up.
It's a combination of factors. I mean, this is the time of year when white sharks move into Massachusetts waters. Some of them stay, others move on to the Gulf of Maine as far north as Canada. And the number of reports generally is proportional to when the ecotours begin, when we start our research. We call in those reports, the ecotour operators call them in, planes up in the air call them in. So it looks like a bump, but it's actually driven by the number of people out on the water. You know, we expect July to ramp up in terms of numbers of white sharks, and we're pretty much on schedule.
Okay, so I did note, though, in a report from National Geographic, and they noted unpublished research from your organization suggesting that the Cape has, quote, potentially the highest density of sharks in the world. And I did not see that coming, Greg. I mean, I know that we, you know, our gray seal population is recovering. We've talked more about this, but I didn't expect that.
Yeah, I think a lot of people didn't expect that. And, you know, those kinds of conclusions are tough. The bottom line is, you know, Cape Cod really represents a waypoint for many white sharks as they move up the east coast of the U.S. this time of year. It's developed as what we call a hotspot for white sharks. And there are other hotspots around the world, you know, in South Africa, in South Australia, Mexico, California, all with what we call high densities of white sharks. I think what the public needs to realize, though, is that at any given time, you know, there are not hundreds of white sharks off our coastline. They come and they go. And we're trying to figure out what the timing of that is, because, it, you know, on a scale of daily, but we don't have that yet. But yes, there have been, we have documented well over 600 individuals that have visited Cape Cod.
So I want to talk about the why a little bit. And again, you know, we know the presence of the sharks here is in part at least tied to the rebound of their main food source, which is seals. We have wondered about climate. It's been a summer of kind of wild weather events, tornadoes in Chicago, flooding in Vermont, hottest June on record. Do you see, have you seen any connection with the impacts of climate change on this density of the shark population, even if it is not, you know, particularly dense at one any given time, you know, 15 feet offshore?
Right. There's a tendency to think, well, this is a new phenomenon and therefore it must be tightly linked to climate change. But we really don't have that, have not established that strong linkage. I mean, white sharks prior to, let's say, 15 to 20 years ago, remained in offshore waters, and because there was nothing to draw them close to shore, and therefore we could not actually find white sharks. But with the restoration of seals, which basically is like a new restaurant opening up for them, they do move in close to shore, and that is what's happening. Now, that's not to say climate change might not impact the population to some extent. I expect that we will see earlier arrivals of white sharks, and they may stay a bit later as our summer becomes more protracted.
We're speaking with Greg Skomel, who's shark biologist with the Massachusetts Division of Maine Fisheries. You're out with a new book called Chasing Shadows. It's written about your life and career tracking and tagging great whites. And, you know, we've been talking to you for years now about sharks. We are trying really hard to learn from you and carry the right messages to the public about great whites, both how to remain safe and how not to kind of buy into hysteria about great whites because of the risk to them. So in a career now in this field, what's changed for you in your understanding of the species and how you talk about great whites to other people?
Well, you know, the book I wrote really traces my passion for this species and my career, you know, as I moved from one shark species to another, then found myself in the right place at the right time when white sharks started returning to Cape Cod. And we think it actually is, you know, the restoration of a natural ecosystem. But when I started working with white sharks, we really knew very, very little about their movement ecology, their behavior in this part of the world. And we've learned a lot over the course of the last decade or so. And I talk about it in the book. But what I'm trying to do really is dispel the fears. You know, when white sharks came back, it's because of the seal population. And we think this is how it used to be. So we do think of it as a conservation success story. But at the same time, we have had repercussions. You know, it's no secret there's been three severe bites from white sharks on swimmers. One of them was fatal. But we have to strike this balance. You know, I think we can live and coexist with white sharks. And the more we learn about it, what we try to do is we share with the public everything we're learning. And I think as the public becomes enlightened and we move away from the jaws thinking, I think people will begin to embrace this species.
All right, Greg Skomel, shark biologist with the Massachusetts Division of Marine Fisheries. The new book is Chasing Shadows. I know we'll speak with you again. Thanks for spending some time with us today. I know you'll be back out there researching and tagging. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Tiziana. I appreciate it.